Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Thank you all for tuning in, and welcome to another episode of Mystery Frequency. Aliens, robots, all found in this classic sci-fi anthology series. Today's episode, the 1950 to 1952 series, 2000 Plus, created by Sherman H. Dreyer. If you enjoy this episode, please check out Volumes 1 in the archives, as well as more sci-fi episodes. And please let me know through the comments on Spotify, or through my email or social media. All those links are found in the description. And while you're there, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to follow, review, and rate. The higher the rating, the more easier it is for people to find this podcast and enjoy these great stories. Now, with all that, please enjoy the show.
Send our imaginations forward into time, into the years beyond 2000 A.D. What strange adventures, what exciting things will we find in the world of tomorrow? 2000 Plus. Today, an adventure of outer space, when the worlds met. The year 2000 plus 20, and the giant spaceport in Washington, D.C., temporary capital of the Federated World Government, an enormous throng, tense with expectancy, jams every available inch of space surrounding the rocket landing field. All eyes strain upward into the clear blue sky, for today is the day, April 21st, 2000 plus 20, and audio and televox networks of the world are at the rocket field to cover the epic event. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is the day we've all been waiting for. In a matter of minutes now, out of that brilliant blue sky will come a ship, a spaceship, carrying in its gleaming hold the first load of uranium taken from the pits of Luna, satellite of Earth. Since the beginning of time... Now, one moment, folks. There's a signal from the tower. This may be it. Take it away, Fred.
This is Fred Haskins reporting from the control tower. Our escort planes have been in contact with the spaceship from Luna for the past 12 minutes. They are now approaching the field from the northeast, and any moment now we can expect...
And there she is! The rocket from Luna! 17 hours out of Luna City! Her magnesium hull white hot from the friction of the atmosphere. Her jet brakes belching fire. She's right over the field now! She's coming down! 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 Mark well this date, my friends. This is the dawn of the interplanetary age.
Earth calling Moon. Earth calling Moon. Come in, Luna City.
Luna City, Johnny Dixon.
Dixon, where have you been? You're 3 minutes late.
Sorry, McCabe. All shipments as scheduled, everything routine.
Report noted. Check out.
Check it.
You know, Johnny...
What, Paul?
Sometimes I think we're crazy. Spending our lives cooped up in this pressurized shell, breathing synthetic air, risking our necks every time we put on a space suit and go out into the cold, barren, pitted piece of green cheese. And for what?
Well, you're kidding, Paul. You know the answer. We're space happy. That's all that's wrong with us. Huh. We pulled every wire and practically tore the World Federation apart getting this assignment on the moon. And we'll do it again when the first flight into deep space gets underway. Next month, next year, whenever they get through with their preparations.
Yeah, I guess that's it. And right now, Johnny, what I wouldn't give to see a tree again. And cornfields in Kansas.
Me, I want to hear a bird sing. And watch the lights go on in the skyscrapers along the waterfront. I want to dance with my girl and breathe in the sweet smell of lilac. Boy, if I... What's that?
Huh?
That sound, that vibration. There, do you hear it?
Well, I'm not sure whether I heard or felt it, Johnny. Like a current of air passing by me.
Yeah, that's it. Some kind of pulsation. Makes my skin tingling.
Listen. Sounded different, didn't it?
Yeah, a different pitch.
The instruments are all steady. Nothing on the visit screen. The radar's negative. What is it, Johnny? Where's it from?
It's not from Earth, I'll swear to that. I got a crazy notion, Paul. A crazy notion that someone's trying to signal it.
You mean...
I don't know what I mean. Maybe McCain's right. Maybe I got a touch of...
Johnny. Johnny, what is it?
Look, Paul. Look at the direction finder. It's swung all the way around. Those sounds, those waves are coming from outer space. I've got to call...
Earth calling Luna City. Earth calling Luna City.
Luna City to Earth. Go ahead, Earth. Go ahead, McCain.
Dixon, what's going on up there? What's the idea of beaming out those hammy signals?
Signals?
Yeah, the harpy pick. The music of the sphere stuff. Giving the boys and the monitors down here the heebie-jeebies.
You got them too, McCabe? You picked them up on Earth?
Certainly. What's it all about?
The signals, if that's what they are coming from one definite spot in outer space.
Outer space?
That's what I said.
Johnny, get your space suit ready. Better have a conference about it.
But listen...
Have your men tune up rocket 307. Blast off at 0800. We'll be expecting you on Earth in the morning.
Now we've been getting those signals, and not one of you geniuses has been able to decipher them.
Very well, Mr. McCabe, if you know of anyone who can do it better, then
take it easy, Professor Wolfson. You don't have to be so touchy. But 10 days. What do you say, Dr. Lee?
10 days or 10 years, it makes no difference. If those sounds or signals are code, it is in a language unknown to man.
You're sure of that?
We've consulted the foremost cryptographists of the world. We've tried every way to break the code.
What does that add up to?
That message, if it is a message, does not come from anywhere on Earth or from any man on Earth.
I told you, Chief. It's what I've been saying all along. Of course you can't decode those messages in any known language, living or dead, because they come from Mars.
Mars, I cannot possibly...
Yes, Mars. My directional finder on the moon indicated it, and McCabe's down here pinned it down. Look at the graph. I brought it.
Directional signals can be wrong.
Yes, sir, but get this. I've been timing those signals. They come at intervals of exactly 24 hours, 37 minutes, and 22 seconds.
The length of the day on Mars.
Yeah. And if we were trying to signal them, we'd do it, say, every night at 1800. That's what they're doing to us.
In that case, the next signal is due
at... 10 minutes and 13 seconds. And we'll be sitting here like lummoxes, feeling our scalps tingle while the message drifts past us.
Gentlemen, excuse, please. But it seems to me the message need not necessarily drift past us.
What do you mean?
By the message, I do not mean the sounds... or the words that are being transmitted. I refer to the thoughts themselves. The thoughts that perhaps are being transferred from the Martians to us.
Thought transference? That's telepathy.
We have discarded that word, Mr. Dixon. Too many charlatans used it. But we do know that there is extrasensory perception of thought impulses. Just as there are sound waves which your ear has learned to interpret... and light waves which your eye and brain transform into a picture. So there are thought waves, electrical impulses discharged by the brain, which vary with the particular thought.
An intriguing idea, Dr. Lee. If only we had some instrument that could pick up and sort out these impulses.
There is such an instrument, Professor Wolfson.
What?
I have been working on it for many years. It involves a scanning screen intercepting an electrified field.
Well, what are we waiting for?
You understand, the telepathetor has only been tested for short distances.
The signals are reaching us. That's the only important thing, isn't it? How soon can we...
The instrument is in the next room. I took the liberty of bringing it with me, hoping it might conceivably be of some use. This way, gentlemen.
You say this little machine can take thoughts and turn them into words we can hear? English words?
Not only English, Mr. McKeith. It will translate thought impulses into any language for which you set the dials. You think of something, Mr. Dixon. Now, listen. First, I set for French.
Et maintenant, les Chinois.
German.
Wonderful, these are Chinesen.
And English?
Darn clever, these Chinese.
You must understand...
Oh, excuse me, Dr. Lee, but we'll have to postpone this. 15 seconds to go. Better set your dials for remote pickup. Stand by, everyone.
Nothing. More power.
Well, it was a good try.
Wait. I have got that feeling again. My skin's beginning to crawl.
Yeah, mine too.
Oh, no, it's just your imagination.
Quiet! They are coming through now.
Planet 4. Greeting, Planet 3.
This is Mars.
The fourth planet from the sun. Greeting, Planet 3. Planet 4 calling Planet 3. We are trying to reach you, Planet 3. If you receive our signal, respond. If you receive our signal, respond. We will communicate again.
Life on Mars. This week, ladies and gentlemen, the question that has bedeviled mankind ever since the day he first stood erect and gazed into the heavens has been answered. There is life on Mars, intelligent, articulate life. The country, the world, tonight seethes with excitement. Has Mars received our response? Has our telepathator succeeded in projecting, as thoughts, the messages spoken into it by human beings? Or can it merely receive...
I'll never get enough of it.
Oh, it's lovely, Johnny. And look, there's a moon out tonight.
Moon? Oh, please. You know, it's hard to believe that back in 1950, people could still get romantic over that cold, dead, pockmarked heavenly yo-yo.
Oh,
now, that red star up there, Mars, that's a different proposition. It's alive. There are living beings up there.
Johnny, it's staggering. It's beyond imagination. It's
rubbish. Why shouldn't there be life up there?
They're so advanced. Spaceships and interplanetary signals.
Maybe you've got a point at that. We thought we were so smart because we reached the moon. Our spaceships aren't developed enough yet to get to Mars.
It's just as well.
What?
Because you'd want to be the first to go.
Wouldn't you like that? I'd be quite a hero. You could point at my picture and say, hey, that's my guy.
You're my guy anyway, Johnny.
Sure, Terry. But don't worry, honey. I won't be seeing any Martians for a long time.
All personnel, stand by. Stand by for XM signal.
That'll be Mars. Hop to it, Johnny.
Telepathator setting 212 degrees, 18 seconds. Frequency 600,000.
Got that, Johnny?
Check.
Planet 4 calling Planet 3. Planet 4 calling Planet 3. We greet you in peace. Your response received.
We got through it all.
The time has come. At this moment, which marks the beginning of the great interstellar age between worlds, it is fitting that there be between us a meeting of minds. Therefore, we are sending a ship to visit your planet.
No, it can't be.
The ship will depart tonight and enter your magnetic field in 7 of our days. Have landing instructions ready. We come in peace. We come in peace.
Gentlemen, this is Matt Wilson bringing you a report of the emergency session of the Federated World Government. Never has an assembly meeting taken place in such an atmosphere of excitement, panic, and recrimination. And here on the floor of the Assembly Chamber,
we've been up
all the emotions
own.
Aroused by the stunning message from Mars have been boiling and clashing all day.
I rise for a point of information. As civilian head of the World Military Government, I want to know why those Martians have beaten us to the draw.
Gentlemen, if the decision we are to make is to be a wise one, we must lay aside passions and fears and consider the question calmly. The Martians are coming, and we must receive them either with friendship or hostility.
Drive them off! Blast them out of the sky!
But that may not be as simple as it sounds. Remember, my friend, these Martians are advanced scientifically, perhaps far beyond us. They have conquered deep space. They can transmit thought waves. They may have weapons, beside which our nuclear bombs are as toy pistols.
Dr. Lee is right, gentlemen. We don't dare fight them off. The risk is too great.
They come in peace. They said so over and over again. Let us so receive them. Very well, very well. If such is the will of this body, let them come in peace. But as civilian head of the world military government, I assure you all, we will not be found napping.
Earth calling Martian interstellar ship. Earth calling Martian interstellar ship. Here are the landing instructions of the Federated World Government. 3 Earth days from this hour, which will be the 6th Martian day of your flight through space, you will be met by an escort of 20 rocket ships. We will greet you in the name of peace. The 20 rocket ships will escort you.
Instructions to Commission of Defense. All escort rocket ships assigned to accompany Martian spaceship will carry the following armaments: death fog sprays, magnetic disintegrators, atomic missiles class B. All weapons shall be on the...
And upon your entry into the Earth's atmosphere, you will circle our globe once and then make landing at our spaceport at Los Alamos, New Mexico, which will be ready to receive you.
The spaceport of Los Alamos shall be mined to a depth of 50 feet with tritonium landmines. The field shall be encircled with radioactive flamethrowers and a reserve force.
From the landing field, you will be conducted to the seat of the world government at Washington, D.C., where you will be received and housed in suitable accommodations. We will welcome you in peace. Check out.
We will welcome you in peace. We hope.
Accommodations. Trust McCabe to hand me a crackpot assignment like this.
Johnny, you're the big spaceman. You're supposed to know by instinct what's suitable accommodation for a Martian.
Don't be silly, Terry. I haven't the slightest notion in the world what they look like except some crazy ideas I picked up from science fiction. I don't know why...
All right. That's why we're here. The head of our anthropology section has more ideas than any science fiction writer you've ever read. Now, here we are.
Ah, Terry, come in.
Hello, Professor. This is Mr. Dixon, the young man I told you about.
I know, Mr. Dixon.
Professor, I've got a problem.
Terry and I have discussed the problem. It is my theory that the Martians will, in most important respects, have the characteristics of the Earthman.
Oh, what's the basis of your theory, Professor?
It's very simple. The accomplishments of the Martians parallel our own. Only a being with opposable thumbs can fashion the intricate devices necessary for spaceships. Only a being with a nervous system like our own could master communication. Only a creature with a brain like ours could dream of peace.
Makes sense, Professor.
That's one side of it, Johnny. A lot of other anthropologists think differently.
Yeah, that is so.
They feel that the Martians living on a dry planet with little vegetation and very little water will be creatures that crawl on the ground like our insects, enlarged a few thousand times. They may look like enormous ants with oversized antennae.
I give up. With 48 hours left, I can't prepare accommodations for every conceivable form of life. I'll just have to improvise after they get here. I just hope they don't get too sick when they first look at us. Matt Wilson again.
again, reporting from the spaceport at Los Alamos. A tremendous crowd is gathered here. We're awaiting the appearance of the spaceship from Mars, which is being escorted by 20 rocket ships from the rendezvous near the moon. According to reports, all's gone well so far. The Martian ship... Oh, one moment, please. An audiobox announcement is going to be made to the people assembled.
Your attention, please. The ship from Mars and its escorts will be seen any moment from the east.
You heard that. Any moment, the ship from Mars and... What? There they are! The ship from Mars! The Martian ship is idling over the field now, casting a huge shadow over the landscape. It's an awe-inspiring spectacle. The ship is tremendous, 18 to 20 stories in height, several city blocks long, and its large windows are fashioned of some kind of transparent...
Civilian commander to Special Defense Patrol. Man battle stations.
Our technical experts are staring at the craft in open-mouthed wonder. Mr. McCabe, what is your reaction?
I am dumbfounded. The ship doesn't seem to operate on a rocket principle. There's no belching fire, no clouds of smoke. I keep wondering what kind of fuel they use, what principles of propulsion, what metals.
Thank you, sir. The ship is almost touching the ground now, and the crowd is getting uneasy. Why, they're falling back, as though there was something. I see it now. It's a blue haze twisting about the Martian ship. Forming a 20-foot blanket of whatever it is.
Command and defense patrol. 0 hour. Reorient all weapons. Remove safety controls. Stand by to fire.
The Secretary of the World Federation is going to speak.
As your great ship settles on our soil, we salute you, the emissaries of space. We wait eagerly for your appearance.
Now, the blue mist has completely vanished. All eyes are on the ship, waiting for the first Martian to appear. There is no sign of activity yet.
Will you respond to our greetings, Martians? Will you make your presence known?
Nothing stirring. No gangplank lowered. No sign of life. Perhaps they were not prepared for atmospheric conditions here. Perhaps on the very brink of success, death has struck within that awe-inspiring vessel. Wait, it looks... Yes, it's moving. A tremendous section of the ship's bow is opening out in front. Like a gigantic tongue, it thrusts forward and drops to earth, forming a great ramp from the ship to our soil. And now it's down, and the surface of the ramp is like nothing ever seen on this earth. A shimmering, impalpable iridescence, unbelievably radiant and beautiful. The throng of spectators is silent, motionless, scarcely breathing, waiting to see the first Martian emerge. And still nothing. No one, no thing comes down the ramp. There is nothing but silence. Listen, that must be the Martian communication vibrations we were told about. Then men on the field are operating the receiving device.
Earthmen, we ask that you send one representative to board our craft. We assure his safety.
Gentlemen! There is no cause for alarm.
I think there is. They want a hostage or a specimen to take back with them.
There's no time for anything. They're waiting for a decision.
Mr. Secretary.
Yes, Mr. McCabe.
If it's all right with the committee, I'd like to go aboard. Technical information, sir.
No.
Quiet, Johnny.
This is my dish, McCabe. I was slated for the space run to Mars, remember? You're not doing me out of this. Besides, you're too valuable to waste. Mr. Secretary, tell them I'm coming aboard.
Men of Mars, we comply with your request. Our representative is about to board your ship.
Get ready, Johnny Dixon. This is it. Take a good long look at the sun in the sky. Take a deep breath of the Earth's good air. You may never get another after you meet. Whatever is waiting at the end of this long ramp. The ramp. It's pulling me forward like a conveyor belt. It's beginning to rise into the air. Get a move on, Johnny. Get out of that ship. Get into that ship. Make it. Locked in. No one. There's no one here. Nothing except that dancing light. A
ago, Earthman.
Where are you, man of Mars? This room is flooded with light, but I see no one.
We are not ready to reveal ourselves.
The people of Earth are waiting to see you, to welcome you. There is nothing to fear.
We are not afraid. Dixon.
You know my name.
We know many things. That is why we are sad. Filled with revulsion.
I don't understand. What do you mean?
Through the dark spaceways we came to you in peace. You said to us, come in peace. But the escorts you sent to honor us were armed for destruction. The very ground on which we now rest seethes with radioactive potential.
Wait! You've misunderstood us. These weapons are for defense against you, not attack.
Many cycles ago, we of Mars learned, as you Earthmen will someday learn, that wars are fought, men are slaughtered, civilizations wiped out by those who attack with weapons of defense.
But our world is at peace now.
Your peace is not peace. It is a thin cloak which covers the hates and fears and savagery of primitive beings. Observe, Dixon. On this large visi-screen, we have for hours been viewing your people in many parts of your Earth. Watch.
The Senator.
Listen.
I warned you it was a trap. We'll never again see Dixon alive. I told you not to trust foreigners. Just give me the word and I'll blast them all into Kingdom Come.
You must not be deceived. He's only one man. The rest of us are different.
Are you? Look at this. From another part of your civilized Earth.
You have been a traitor to our party. You've been guilty of bourgeois thinking. You have sold us out to the enemies of our people. You will pay the penalty. But first you will confess. Confess! Confess!
That's a backward part of our planet. It's not fair to judge by them.
Then we reveal a more civilized area. The country of your birth, Dixon.
No, no, no!
The law became... Too good for him. Hang him, I say, hang him. The rope. String him up from the highest tree in the square. Lynch him. Lynch him. Lynch him.
Now you know why we shall not reveal ourselves to you. If you are like this to these of your own kind, what will you think? What will you do when you see us? Strange as we are.
Don't go. We know you may be different from us, but we can all meet in peace.
Earthman, peace must be achieved through toil and sacrifice of those few among you who understand its meaning. It may take many cycles, but in the end, the day will arrive. Then, and then only, we will return. Go back to your people, man of Earth, and give them the message from Mars.
Next week, another exciting drama on 2000 Plus. The Silent Noise. In the year 2000 plus 20, an important man is murdered. How will the police of the future track down a killer? And what new methods of assault will the criminals of tomorrow use? Listen next week and you'll find out. 2000 plus is produced by Sherman H. Dreyer and Robert Winolson. In today's story, Ken Williams played Johnny, Louis Van Ruten played the voice of Mars, Lon Clark played McCabe, Frank Behrens was the Senator, Amsie Strickland was Terry, Sanford Bickert was Paul, and Gilbert Mack was Dr. Lee. The orchestra was conducted by Emerson Buckley, music composed by Elliot Jacoby. Script by Judith and David Bublik. Sound by Walt Shaver and Al April. Engineer Bob Albrecht, and your announcer, Ken Marvin. This program was transcribed. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
I have received word of a strange invention. What it can do will amaze science and strike terror to the world.
2,000+ science fiction adventures from the world of tomorrow, the years beyond 2000 AD. 2,000+ presents The Insect.
Oh, it's wonderful news, darling. It means I'll probably get that research appointment at the university.
Oh, I can hardly believe it, George.
Oh, here's the telegraph of the Dean of Science himself. I'll take the jet plane in about 2 hours and be there in plenty of time for my meeting this afternoon.
I know. I'll get a bottle of champagne and we'll celebrate a dinner tonight.
Well, that's nice, but I'm not sure I'll be home for dinner.
Oh?
The meeting may go on. Maybe I'll have to stay overnight, take the plane back in the morning.
Well, then we'll have champagne for breakfast.
Well, let's not hope too much. Hey, I've got to gather my papers and things while I'm going to get to the airport in time. You'd better help me.
In your lavatory?
Oh, now, look. The wife of a budding scientific genius shouldn't act like that.
But, George, I'm frightened when I go in there.
Nonsense. They won't hurt you.
No, I can't stand insects. That's why I stay out of your lab.
I've got to have help with these papers. What do you want me to do, cancel the meeting because my wife is afraid of the work I do?
Oh, I'm sorry, darling.
All right. I'll try to do it myself.
Don't be angry, George. If they were ordinary insects, tiny ones were... Maybe it would be different.
Even with what I've done to them, they're not so big. So I've taken a spider, a housefly, and a wasp, and by means of my growth ray, I've made them larger. The spider still isn't any bigger than my fist. The housefly is about as large as a pack of cigarettes. The wasp no bigger than a golf ball. They're not giants.
But they look so... Oh, horrible when they're even that big.
Easier to observe and study. That's why the university is interested in my work. With a long-term appointment and a grant to amplify the growth ray, maybe I can really increase the size of the insect. Imagine a fly as big as a horse. That would be some horse fly. Hey, that's a joke.
All right, George. I'll help you.
It's only the papers we're packing. You won't have to go near the insect cages. Now, hand me those poisonous insects. That one there.
This is?
Right.
Do you have any poisonous ones in here now?
Only Sam, the spider. He's in the glass cage by those books.
Oh, I don't want to look.
Maybe if you'd look, you wouldn't have such ridiculous ideas. Sam is a nice guy. He just
squats and stares. Looks like a wise old man.
Oh, if I looked, I'd get sick. All those legs, those hairs, the wound.
Okay, okay. Now the notebook, please. Hey, be careful.
Why? Well, what's the matter?
That machine is very delicate. You almost touched it.
Oh, the growth rate?
Mm-hmm. I don't want that running while I'm gone.
Oh, don't worry. I can't wait to get out of here.
Let's see now. Have I got everything? Yep. Well, that does it. Come on. After you, meet terror-stricken beauty. You know, I hope when we get to the university, if I get the appointment, you'll keep your disgust of insects to yourself. A wife is supposed to build up her husband's work. Faculty-wise do that all the time.
George, don't argue with me now. I just can't help the way I feel.
Sam should really be fed while I'm gone.
Stop it! I'm not going in there.
All right. What about Pete the housefly? He's not poisonous.
You feed your insects when you get home. Now, hurry up. George will be late.
Sure. Well, goodbye.
Oh, George, I don't want you to leave when you're annoyed like that.
I'm sorry, darling. I really love you. But I love my insects, too.
Martin, here are the groceries you ordered.
Oh, hello, Bill. Right in here.
Okay. On the table?
Please. Oh, I hope the oranges are better this time than they were last.
Oh, Mr. Ginkelheimer said to tell you that these oranges are swell.
Well, I'll know when I squeeze them for breakfast. Oh, thank you, Bill.
Was Mr. Martin home?
Mr. Martin? No, he isn't, Bill. Why?
Well, he was going to show me his bugs.
Oh, you don't want to look at them. But they're dreadful.
I find them very interesting. Mr. Martin said he'd take me into his lab today. That's why I delivered your order first. I was anxious to see them.
Oh, Mr. Martin was called away suddenly. He got a telegram and had to leave almost at once. But you'll be home tomorrow.
Gee, tomorrow I've got to work at the other store, the one on North Street.
Well, in a few days, then. The bugs will still be here, Bill.
Mrs. Martin, would it be too much trouble if you let me peek at them?
I never go into Mr. Martin's laboratory.
I won't hurt anything. Just peek. I was kind of looking forward to seeing them.
Oh, it's a horrid place, Bill, that laboratory. You wait till Mr. Martin gets home.
Sure, Mrs. Martin, if you say so.
Well, don't look so glum. What you men see in those revolting creatures, I'll never know.
They're scary. They're so big. I feel funny when I look at them. Then Mr. Martin explains about science and stuff, and it's really interesting.
Would you like to be a scientist, Bill?
I sure would.
Well, I suppose I ought to encourage it. I won't take you in, but you can peek. You know where the door is.
Oh, thanks, Mrs. Martin. Thanks very much.
But don't touch anything.
I won't.
I better put these groceries away.
Mrs. Martin! Help! Help! Help!
Bill! Bill, what's the matter? Oh! Oh, no. No!
I never saw it before. It wasn't here the last time.
I don't know.
At least 6 feet high.
What is it?
Look at the eyes. The feelers out in front, waving. Wings.
It's got wings. It can fly at us. Kill us. Eat us. Get out of here. We must get out of here.
Keep your eyes on it.
It looks like a moth. A giant moth.
Watch it. If it flies, you...
Oh, 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 oh. You won't closet to the door.
Open it. Quick, open it.
I can't. It's locked.
Where's the key?
In the other room. We can't get out. We can't get out.
Stop looking at it. Oh, stop crying, Mrs. Martin. It isn't doing anything. It's just sitting there, fanning its wings.
Oh, Bill, what should we do?
I don't know.
Let's move in the corner by that chair. We can crouch down behind it. Now, we'll just sit here and watch it.
Now, Mr. Martin, I'm very interested in your growth, Ray. As Dean of Science, I want to be certain that this university encourages brilliant young scholars who are experimenting in new fields of research.
I understand,
sir. At the same time, I must be satisfied that the research will be of fundamental value.
Yes, sir.
Now, suppose you talk for a while. Tell me about your work.
Well, I have always been interested in the effect of environment on organisms. I narrow the environmental factors to universal conditions applicable to all organisms. Mm-hmm. For example, sir, air, temperature, humidity, light, and so forth. And then I approach each of these conditions from the point of view of its specific effects on organisms. I discovered that the presence or absence of light gave me the widest variance of reaction.
Oh, excuse me, in what way the widest variance?
In the effect on physical growth, change, adaptation.
Oh, I see.
You see, sir, because light is a general term, I broke its definition down into all known rays, infrared, ultraviolet, so forth, and studied reactions of organisms to those rays in every conceivable combination.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after 2 years, I evolved the theory that if certain rays could be combined electronically and concentrated on living organisms for specified periods of time, their growth would be greatly stimulated.
And you have constructed such a machine?
Yes, I have. The Electrodyna Spectrum, the growth ray machine.
What have you accomplished with it so far?
I've multiplied the growth of certain insects many times. My present machine is small and homemade, and its power is not too great. But so far, I've increased the size of a fly to that of a pack of cigarettes.
Mm.
The size of a spider to that of my fist.
What kind of spider?
A tarantula.
It's a very dangerous and poisonous insect to work with.
Well, being a tropical spider, it might be more receptive to light. Its size has tripled.
Tell me, Mr. Martin, what is the optimum increase in size that you've so far obtained?
About 8 times with the fly. The size increase varies with the insects. There's a lot of research yet to be done.
Yes, so I can see. Your work certainly excites the imagination. Think of your having the kind of equipment that will permit a 20, 50, 100, or even 1,000-fold increase in an insect's size. Imagine an insect large enough to attack and devour a human being. Imagine this university needing lion cages to contain its giant insects.
Well, there's no limit to what new things we could learn about all manner of organisms with the growth ray. Not just insects.
Yes, that's right. Mr. Martin, I'd like you to stay on another few hours so that we can talk some more.
I'd be very happy.
Perhaps you'd like to phone your wife, but you'll be a bit late.
Thank you, sir.
You can use the phone in the other office. And Mr. Martin.
Yes?
When she asks you how everything's going, you tell her that it's going just fine.
It's still sitting there, looking at us. Thing I've ever seen. 6 feet high. Those giant wings. How does it get here, Mrs. Martin? Somehow the growth ray must have begun working. It gives off a slight glow. The moth must have seen it, flown toward it. It must have seen us. Those eyes. They're big as dinner plates. Maybe it's swimming. Then it will come toward us. It'll try to kill us. Edith. Don't, Bill. Don't say that. Crouch down, Lord. This chair protects us.
We've got to get out of here. The door's locked, but isn't there some other way out?
Only the window. Behind the moth.
Is the window locked? I can't see. The shade is drawn.
Yes. Yes, the window is locked.
Gosh, if it would only fly.
fly to the other corner of the room.
Then what would you do?
Maybe I could run to the window, pull up the shade, unlock the window, get out and get help.
Just leave me alone with that horrible, monstrous creature. Oh, no, but...
What do we do?
I don't know.
When will Mr. Martin come home?
This afternoon, tonight. Maybe not until tomorrow. Listen. The phone.
Maybe that's Mr. Martin calling.
Yes.
When you don't answer, maybe he'll come home.
No. No, he'll think I'm out shopping or visiting.
Mrs. Martin, look.
The moth. It stopped moving its wings.
It's looking right at us. At this corner. I'll bet it hears the telephone. It scares him.
Do you think that's Maya? That must be George calling him. Why doesn't he realize something has happened? Why doesn't he call the neighbors or the police? Why doesn't he come home?
Mrs. Martin, I think it's going to fly.
What do we do?
I don't know. It'll kill us.
If it heard the phone, it'll hear us. When it flies, crouch down, Bill, get as much protection from the chair as possible. And scream. Yell. Anything to make noise.
Okay. Okay, Mrs. Martin.
Oh, the way it just stares.
Maybe. Maybe it won't fly. What?
The phone has stopped ringing. Yes, Bill. Let's be quiet.
Like a nightmare being here. George, darling, you knew I hated these insects. Yet you built a laboratory in our home. Home. A place with a room of terror. Why am I here? Why did things happen to trap me here? Was it because I hated George's work? Was it because I refused to help him with these repulsive creatures? I see the moth. Its body is like a worm. Quivering. Rippling. Gray. Eyes staring, knowing I'm here. What's he going to do?
It's flying at us. Scream again. Make noise.
It's flying wildly against the wall, the ceiling, the fireplace, the window.
His wings hit the window shade. It rolled up.
Sunlight's coming in. He's flying blindly, crazily. Bill, the glass cage. The glass cage with the spider. The poisonous spider.
I see it scurrying across the floor. Over there, by the sofa.
The giant moth is sitting on the bookshelf. And on the floor, like a fuzzy ball of death, the spider... The tarantula!
Well, Mr. Martin, I am delighted to see you. The dean phoned and said you were coming over. I think I am the last member of the faculty committee he wants you to see. Oh, sit down, won't you?
Thank you, Professor Buckley. Yes, I've been going all afternoon from one appointment to the other.
And all of us are happy to talk with you. The dean is quite excited about your research, you know.
Yes, I'm very pleased about that. Professor Buckley, I hope you won't think me rude at the beginning of our meeting, but I wonder if I might use your phone.
Why, of course, Mr. Martin. Is something wrong?
No, I don't think so, but I phoned my wife several times to tell her I was staying on all afternoon, and there's been no answer.
Oh, I'm sure there's nothing wrong. By all means, call. The phone is right there.
Thank you.
Number, please.
Lakeview 84572. And reverse the charges, please.
Thank you.
Still doesn't seem to be any answer.
Oh, well, let it ring a few more times.
No answer. Shall I keep trying?
Yes, operator. Please keep trying.
I'll call you, sir.
Thank you. I can't understand it. It's not like Betty to be away so long.
They're both still there, Mrs. Martin.
Yes. Still there.
I saw the spider last week. As big as Mr. Martin's fist. I looked into the glass cage. I could see the hair on its legs, like bristles. And Mr. Martin showed me its mouth, where it bites and kittens with the poison.
Stop it, Bill! Stop! For heaven's sake!
Oh. I'm sorry, Mrs. Martin. I can't stop looking at them.
They don't like the sunlight. That's why they're on the sofa.
But the whole room is flooded with sunlight since the shade went up.
Hiding in this corner behind this chair doesn't give us the protection we need.
Why? The moth is too big to get at us here.
But the spider, it can scurry on the rug under the chair.
I'll take off my shoes. Something to hit with. If it comes... There. Now you take one of them.
Look. Its wings are fluttering again.
It's going to fly again.
But let's not scream. It might scare the spider.
You may hear too?
I don't know.
Here it comes.
The picture on the wall. He's knocked it down.
The spider. The spider.
Where is he?
I don't know. Somewhere. Somewhere in this room.
The moth. It stopped lying. But the spider. Maybe it's near us. Oh, Bill. Bill, can't you see where it is?
I don't know. I'll call you back.
Ask for operator 34, sir. Thank you.
No answer yet?
No, sir. Of course, I did tell Betty that I might be late or even stay overnight. She may have gone to her mother's.
Well, it's a real pleasure finding a young man who cares that much for his wife. I suppose Mrs. Martin feels the same way about you.
Oh, Betty's wonderful.
Yes, I'm sure she is. After all, not many women would approve of their husbands inventing machines that make insects larger. You've got a rare wife, Mr. Martin. One who doesn't object to giant insects in the house.
Keep the shoe tight in your hand, Bill. If you see the spider, hit it. It's hard.
Yes, ma'am. I will.
I can't stand it much longer. My hands are trembling. I'm cold all over.
Me too, Mrs. Martin. I think I'm getting sick.
Oh, you mustn't, Bill.
If I could have a drink of water.
The moth. It's acting strangely. See?
Yeah. But its feelers are kind of limp. And its body.
Oh, that disgusting worm-like body. It's flabby all of a sudden. Droopy.
Its eyes. They look different, too. I don't know why, but somehow the...
Yes. Yes, you're right.
Huh?
What's the matter?
Spider! Spider! Spider!
Where?
Oh, no. No. It was only the hem of your skirt touching my leg. I thought it was the spider.
Oh, Bill. Bill, what's going to happen to us?
Gosh, Mrs. Martin, don't cry. Please don't cry.
Well, Mr. Martin, are the terms satisfactory to you?
Oh, yes, sir. Very much so. Thank you, sir.
It's going to be a great pleasure having you at the university. And I know that you find your association with us a real incentive to carrying on your work with the growth rate.
I'm sure of that. I'll do my very best to be a credit to the university and to scientific research.
Well, my boy, it's time for you to leave if you want to catch the 6:10 and be home to tell your wife. You just get home and you'll find that there's an explanation for why she didn't answer the phone all day.
I'm sure you're right. Thank you again, Dean. Thank you very much.
feel better now, Mrs. Martin.
I guess so, Bill. I'm all cried out. I haven't a tear left.
Look, Mrs. Martin, I'm going to try to reach the window.
The window?
The moth is back on the couch. I think I can make a run for the window once I push the chair aside a little.
But he might attack you. Or me?
Well, maybe he won't.
Oh, but he will, he will. The moth is so big. 6 feet high. Bill, what would happen to either of us if he did attack? I would be eaten alive.
Do they have teeth? Could it really kill us?
Well, moths eat all sorts of things. George would know exactly. I had a whole group of claws ruined last year. It's so big, so terribly big. One bite and... Oh, Bill, I don't know what to say.
I'm going to try it. I'll crouch down. I'll push the chair out a little, squeeze by between the chair and the wall, and make a dash for the window. Now, there. The chair's pushed aside. Now, give me my shoes. Okay, Mrs. Martin. Here I go.
I'm here. I'll try to unlock the window.
Look out! The moth is flying at you!
Get away! Get away, you! Get away!
Bill!
For heaven's sake.
It's Bill. Bill, the grocery boy. He's killed. Killed by that.
Look at that moth. I can't believe it. It's dead. Bill. Bill. Bill.
What? Oh, Mr. Mark.
You'll find it. The glass broke. It's on the floor.
Let's get out of here fast. All right, sit down, Bill. Oh. For heaven's sake, what happened? Here, sit down, darling. I'll get you a drink.
Yes.
Here you are.
Thank you.
Now, tell me.
The laboratory door snapped behind us. The giant moth was there. He knocked over the glass cage with the spider. We thought we'd die. And I thought Bill was dead.
I'll find the spider and kill it. But as for the moth, darling, despite its size, you had nothing to fear.
What?
Well, you see, darling, the adult moth doesn't eat. It has no mouth. Nothing to attack or kill with. Despite its size, Trichophaga tapetella, the clothes moth, is utterly harmless.
You mean we could have just shooed it away and opened the window?
Of course, dear. The reason it's dead and why you could have waited without worrying is that a moth cannot live more than 6 hours in sunlight. You see, dear, all this horror was unnecessary.
Next week, a strange drama of a silver rocket and an unseen visitor from space. Be sure to listen to 2000 Plus, radio's different series. 2000 Plus is produced by Dreyer and Winolson Productions, Incorporated. In today's cast, Joan Shea portrayed Betty, Larry Robinson was Bill, Ralph Bell was George, and Bill Griffiths was the Dean. Music composed and played by Milton Caine. Sound, Al April and George Cooney. Engineer, Bob Albrecht. This is Ken Marvin speaking. This program came from New York. In ancient times, they thought that the rising of the dog star Sirius was responsible for the sultry weather of midsummer. Sirius or not, no one needs to be told that these are dog days, and every sportsman knows it's perfect weather for just plain fishing. So for the latest tips and information on how to catch everything from minnows to muskies, listen to Mutual's Rod and Gun Club of the Air every Thursday. You'll hear moderator Milo Bolton with his panel of sports experts in an informal sports session you won't want to miss. Listen to Rod and Gun Club of the Air every Thursday. You'll enjoy it. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.